UTC 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, January 10th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thanks for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Many Zimbabweans with expired South African permits say they are no longer accessing their bank accounts.
We have been approached by quite a number of people who have said their bank accounts have been frozen. They can't get paid. In turn, we have contacted the Department of Home Affairs, who have assured us that they are in discussions with the South African Banking Association over that issue.
Some Zimbabweans urge the government to introduce electronic voting system in the country. And boxing is almost down and out in the country. Stay tuned. Many Zimbabweans with expired South African permits say they are no longer accessing their bank accounts. According to Ngabuto Mapena of the Zimbabwe Community in South Africa, those who are affected were supposed to apply for new special permits by December 31st, 2014. Mapena tells Studio 7 most banks are demanding new valid permits from those people who want to access their bank accounts.
We have been approached by quite a number of people who have said their bank accounts have been frozen. They can't get paid. In turn, we have contacted again the Department of Home Affairs, who have assured us that they are in discussions with the South African Banking Association over that issue. They said the Banking Association is now in discussion with individual banks to ensure that in all bank accounts that have been frozen are reactivated, and none of the DZP holder bank accounts should have their accounts closed until the new permits are issued.
Do you think that the Bankers Association in South Africa will actually agree to some of these suggestions that will come from maybe the Minister of Home Affairs and your organization?
We don't see any challenges because it is Home Affairs Department that issues these permits, it's government. So if government says we now have a situation where we delayed in terms of renewing these permits, now people can't access their salaries. Because what you might have, these people might end up approaching the court to say, we were told in August by the minister that we launched our appeals. We have made these appeals, and it is the Department of Home Affairs that is delaying in issuing out these permits. So if the Department of Home Affairs issues these permits, people will be able to sort out the accounts. Now, if there is delay in the issuing of permits, it is the duty of Home Affairs to convince the banks to ensure that no one's account is frozen.
That was Ngabuto Mapena of the Zimbabwe Community in South Africa speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. When unable to get a comment from the Bankers Association and South African state officials, banks normally demand valid identity documents from clients, a move meant to curb fraudulent activities. VOA. Over the years, Zimbabwe has held elections that were disputed in one way or the other. Now election watchdogs in the country are urging the authorities to change the country's voting system from manual to an electronic system to ensure poll results reflect the true democratic will of the people. Our correspondent Thomas Tiripasi has more details.
From 2000 to date, Zimbabwe's electoral processes and outcomes have been dismissed by the opposition and the international community as incorrect reflections of the will of the Zimbabwean people. Disputed elections have resulted in the country being isolated by the West. The United States and European nations, for example, imposed the sanctions on Harare, citing, among other issues, alleged rigged elections. But President Robert Mugabe insists that sanctions against him and his inner circle were imposed to punish Harare for embarking on land reforms that dispossessed the majority of the country's white commercial farmers. The Movement for Democratic Change and some civil society organizations allege that all elections held since 2000 were marred by several irregularities that included ballot stuffing, double voting, and voter disenfranchisement, among others. To curb this in future, Elections Resource Center Director Tawanda Chimini is advising the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to adopt the use of technology in the running of elections to ensure that the collation and announcement of election results is speeded up to minimize chances of electoral fraud.
What we witnessed was a free expression of the will of the people using a system that people had confidence in. But more importantly, my take on the election is not that people had confidence in e-voting, but people had confidence in the administration of elections in Namibia. So even if Namibians had voted using the manual way of voting without e-voting, I would again put forward that Namibians have confidence in who runs their elections, hence the limited cases of conflict pertaining to e-voting. And coming to the issue of Zimbabwe's elections in terms of what lessons could be drawn, basically, Zimbabwe has to invest in building public confidence in elections.
Namibia became the first country to use the electronic voting system in its recent presidential election. The system has over the years been used in developed countries such as the United States and Britain. Former Oxford lecturer Pilani Zamchia, who observed the Namibian polls, says the electronic voting system reduces the cost of running elections and ensures that the outcome of the polls would be made public in a very short space of time.
This system, the electronic voting machine, it reduced human, administrative and paper cost. So it was actually cheaper. For example, Namibia would have spent $2 million on paper. But having adopted this EVM, the electoral voting machine, they only spent close to $200,000.
In 2008, it took the Electoral Commission more than a month to announce the results of the presidential elections that were contested by the MDC. ERC's programs manager, Jack Zaba, agrees with Zamchia.
There's another vision which I think would excite a lot of young people in Zimbabwe, which is called internet voting system or remote voting system. In other instances, it uses SMS.
The electronic voting system has its own disadvantages.
If you run an election without paper trail, without all that paper, recounting can be very difficult in the case of an electoral dispute.
However, ZEC chairperson Rita Makarau tells Studio 7 that Zimbabwe is not yet ready to start using e-voting technology, although she agrees that this would effectively improve the credibility of the country's elections. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
It's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women, hosted by Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye in Washington. Today we have the pleasure of speaking to Lillian Chorua, a Harare-based lawyer who has taken it upon herself to start a trust called the Quadruplets Club Trust of Zimbabwe to assist families that are blessed with quadruplets. Ms. Chorua says she took up this initiative to start the trust after following the story of the Mutasa family, where 20-year-old Alice Mutasa and her husband were blessed with quadruplets girls several months ago at Harare Hospital, but are still at the hospital because they do not have adequate accommodation. Ms. Chorua took it amongst herself to start the trust so that she can be able to raise enough funds to find accommodation for the Mutasa family and others that may face such a predicament in future. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Ms. Chorua.
Thank you very much, Marvelous. I'm humbled indeed to be on your program.
Ms. Chorua, you have taken the initiative to set up a trust for Zimbabwe's quadruplets that are still at Harare Hospital. Tell us a little bit about this effort that you're making to try and get them released from the hospital.
After visiting the Kwazin Hospital some time back and talking to the parents, I saw the need in the agency in finding accommodation for them. So what I've done basically for now is I've registered a trust for them, which will benefit other Kwazis as well in trying to fundraise for accommodation for the Kwazis. So at the moment, our utmost agency is in acquiring a conducive place of residence for the parents and the babies.
What moved you as a woman to take this on?
Well, I guess to, it's maternal instinct. What has happened to Alice, I kind of relate to it, of what happened when I was in my 20s, because I also had my first child when I was 20. And I remember being very, very helpless with a baby. Here I am, I'm 20 years, and you don't even know how to change a nappy, and there's nobody else to assist you. And I guess that's what moved me. If I see a problem, I want to do something about a problem.
Tell us a little bit about this couple. You say that you initially just went to visit them and you were providing them with money for food and diapers, but you later on saw a greater need. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Mutasas, the husband is called Meshek and the wife is Alice. Meshek is 25 years old and Alice is turning 21 years old. And coincidentally, I share the same birthday with Alice. So I guess the bonding is getting stronger. And they stay in Mbare in a one-room house. They've got a four-year-old boy. Currently, they rent a one-room at a certain house in Mbare, and there are other lodgers who actually stay in the house. That's the reason why the hospital could not see it fit to release the child to such an environment.
Tell us about your trust. What is it called? And for those that want to contribute, how do they go about it?
The trust that we formed is called the Quadruplets Trust Club of Zimbabwe. We've opened a KEBS account where we are trying to source funds to deposit so that they can give us a house. And we also have a biller code, Econet biller code, where people can deposit through EcoCash. And for those who want to donate money in Zimbabwe through EcoCash, we've got a biller code, which is 81741. I'll repeat the number, 81741.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Ms. Lillian Chorua, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women.
Thank you very much, Marvela. I'm humbled to be on this program, and may God bless you too.
The Women's Forum was hosted by Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope you're going to have a lovely weekend. Now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has reacted decisively to actions by two of our citizens accused of helping to finance and lead an unsuccessful coup attempt in Gambia. Federal prosecutors have charged a Texas businessman and a former U.S. Army sergeant with conspiring with a group of Gambian dissidents to orchestrate a deadly takeover of the small West African nation last month. Tcherno Nigi and Papa Fall, both American citizens of Gambian descent, were charged with conspiring to violate the Neutrality Act, a 1935 law that prohibits Americans from fighting a nation at peace with the United States. Nigi allegedly provided funds to Fall and a group of Gambian dissidents to purchase arms for an attack in Gambia's capital, Banjul. The aim was to topple longtime President Yahya Jammeh and replace him, at least on an interim basis, with Nigi. The plot fell apart when State House guards overwhelmed the attackers, leaving many dead and wounded. Both men fled the country and were arrested upon returning to the U.S. U.S. law enforcement action in this matter highlights the importance we place on preventing our citizens from taking part in violence of this nature overseas and our commitment to addressing such issues through the criminal justice system. In 1984, for example, Americans conspiring with a group of Haitian nationals were arrested after meeting with an illegal arms dealer seeking weapons to overthrow the Haitian government. In 2004, three Virginia men were found guilty of conspiring to aid the Indian terrorist group Lashkar-e-Taiba. And in 2006, an American was charged with working with a former military leader of the Hmong peoples in Laos of preparing to wage war against the government of Laos. The United States reiterates our strong condemnation of any attempt to seize power through extra-constitutional means. As the investigation of the plot continues in Gambia, we call on the government of the Gambia to avoid arbitrary arrests based on a person's perceived links to the alleged plotters and respect human rights and the rule of law.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Joy Shulman and her husband, Joseph Sparks, have taken to Zimbabwe music, especially Mbira and Washo, which they showcased at various performances around the United States. Recently, they performed here at the Voice of America with the help of Studio 7's Chonga Kanemiri and Chris Kande and other American Mbira player, Christian State, for a division party. Studio 7's Nyimiaki Makelele spoke with Shulman, who has been to Zimbabwe once, and sparks about their love for the traditional Zimbabwean music.
I'm Joy Shulman. I've been playing mbira since about 91, and I learned here and in Zimbabwe.
My name is Joe Parks, and I've been introduced to this music through Joy. I was a drummer for a long time, and it's taken all of my drumming experience to play the whole show properly.
You're married to each other.
Right.
Yes. So did you learn it after you got married, during your courtship?
During the courtship.
Really? That's what really sealed the deal for you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah?
Absolutely. We're high school sweethearts, and when we were kids, neither of us knew anything about drumming, but we were constantly drumming. So somehow our relationship has a lot of percussive qualities, I suppose. So there's a rhythm in our lives that gets expressed this way.
I always say when I heard how he could jam, that's when I decided to marry him.
You went to Zimbabwe?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I went in late 96 through mid 97, and it just felt like the time was right to go.
Who did you go with? What was the motivation?
I went with another mbira player friend, American friend from Oregon named Nathan. Actually, this might be a good time to talk about there being a whole community of aficionados, people who love and play and sing and dance and eat and breathe and sleep Shona music.
And you're talking about non-Zimbabwean
Non-Zimbabweans. Americans, Westerners, Europeans, even Japan now. This started out mostly in the Western United States, Washington State and Seattle, and has kind of spread from there. There are many marimba bands playing mbira music adapted to marimba and other compositions. Gee, there are people, Americans in this country, who have been playing mbira longer than me.
Hmm.
Dumi Maraire.
The late Dumisani Maraire.
Right. He was doing his doctorate at University of Washington in ethnomusicology, and he formed a marimba band, so that's where it originated from.
So, of course, I have to ask you to play a little bit of the music. Do you play together?
At this point, we play in our living room. Sometimes we play on the streets or at culture fairs.
So I want to hear what you play in your living room, the two of you together.
Okay. I'm playing mbira. Here we go. This is Nemam Sasa. It's a song about making a home, which is appropriate for us since we just found a new home.
Now, Mr. Parks, you're not from Zimbabwe either.
No, I'm not. I was born in Brooklyn, New York.
And you're playing Hosho from Zimbabwe.
Starting a community in Greenbelt, Maryland.
So what does it mean to you? And have you been able to play with real Zimbabweans to be able to see how you match up?
Well, today was my first opportunity.
Playing with Jonga Kandemiri.
Another Hosho player.
Yes, Jonga Kandemiri.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. So for me, what the Hosho indicates and is about is the ability to support and to lead at the same time. It's what Joy would call micro beats.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a heartbeat, you know. It's a party. So I try very hard to play this properly and to give the energy that feels right spiritually.
Sparks and his wife Joy Shulman are an American couple who have turned up to mbira and Hosho. They spoke with Studio 7's Nimiake Makelele. For more details of this interview, go to our website www.voazimbabwe.com. And now to recap today's top stories. Many Zimbabweans with expired South African permits say they are no longer accessing their bank accounts. And some Zimbabweans say the government should introduce electronic voting. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C. Good night.